Relationships. As humans, we're hardwired for them. What would it be like to have a guide to relationships that are authentic? Tap into the collective wisdom of teachers, authors, and healers who have accumulated experience on this subject. I've learned that there are overlapping soul circles of people in our lives. Family of choice. Welcome to the family.
Welcome to It's All About Relationships. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein. And the music that lulls us into the show and leads us out of the show was written by my friend Barry Goldstein. It's called Prayer of the Heart. And you can find all of Barry's beautiful music at barrygoldsteinmusic.com. Barry just came out with a new book called The Secret Language of the Heart. And if you go to the Vivid Life website, www.vividlife.me, you'll see a review that I wrote of the book. I would heartily, no pun intended, recommend that you read the book. So today my guest is a gentleman whose work I've been aware of for a number of years, and we've not yet met or not yet spoken, but his name is Noah Levine, and he created something called Refuge Recovery. And today's show is going to be Refuge Recovery, a Dharma Punk's View, P-U-N-X, apostrophe S, view on addiction. And he is the author of several books, one of them called Dharma Punk, and I welcome Noah to the show.
Thank you, Edie. Happy to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Now, I have to tell you, my introduction to your family came long before I knew about you. I met your parents, God, how many years ago? Probably in the early 1990s. They were speaking in Princeton, New Jersey. And at the time, I actually met your mother in the bathroom while she was washing her hands. And I tell this story a lot as a way of indicating what a resilient thriver she is. She had her sleeves rolled up, and I saw these multiple tattoos on her arms. And I asked her about them, and she, what did she call them, her victory tattoos? I don't know if that's how she referred to them in general.
Yeah, something like that.
She got another tattoo, as if it's a way of saying, you're not going to beat me, you know. So, and when I heard them speak, or heard your dad speak, your mom just held space. She didn't do a lot of talking in the presentation. And I had interviewed them many years ago for a magazine that I published called Visions. So that's the heritage, the legacy that you grew up with. And I want to acknowledge also the passing of your father.
Thank you.
You know, my heart is with you in that. You're welcome. You're welcome. So how would you define you? I mean, you're more than your parents' son. Who is Noah?
Well, you know, Stephen and Andrea were wonderful teachers, and they were really my teachers in some ways, many ways. And I don't usually define myself in you know, such terms. But a big part of my experience in this life has been, you know, drug addiction that led me to meditation practice and recovery. And for the last 28 years, I've been in recovery and, you know, maintaining abstinence and, you know, practicing Buddhist meditation. And, you know, became a psychotherapist and, you know, started teaching and writing. And, you know, so, you know, part of my definition is, you know, recovering person, teacher. But then, you know, of course, like everybody, then, you know, I define myself also quite clearly as a, you know, a son and a father, and I have two young children, so a lot of my time and energy is into the practice of parenting and the joy and, and challenges of parenting. And you know, and I run, you know, three nonprofit organizations and one for-profit organization, so I have a sort of business you know, kind of side to, you know, like all people, we are multifaceted.
So when do you sleep?
Exactly.
Mine is little kids. Yeah.
I'm really good at finding really great help for everything that I do, and not micromanaging and letting, you know, these wonderful people that surround me, you know, help run everything, all of the organizations that I do.
Wonderful. Now, being in the addiction field myself for a number of years, I've heard different descriptions of, you know, that people have for addiction. How would you define it to somebody who may not know what addiction is?
I have a sense of addiction as any kind of compulsive, repetitive behavior that in the beginning gave some sort of pleasure or relief, but in the long run creates a sense of suffering, an experience of suffering.
Mm. Yeah. So that ties in, interesting you use that word, because the people that I know that are practicing Buddhists use that word suffering.
Right.
So how would you explain the suffering of addiction from a Buddhist perspective?
Well, I mean, in some ways, like in refuge recovery, the Buddhist addiction recovery program that I've created and been supporting for the last few years, we actually talk about the first noble truth, the first step is acknowledging and accepting and stopping the denial or minimalization around the suffering of addiction. And so suffering can be defined in so many different ways. It can be the suffering of being unsatisfied, the suffering of being attached and addicted and in clinging and craving, the suffering of loss, of, you know, the hangovers, the guilt, the regret, the shame that goes along with, you know, addictive behavior. So there's, you know, I feel like this term suffering, the Buddhist word dukkha that we translate as suffering is multifaceted. And so, you know, many people, including myself, have said, well, you know, we use the term suffering, but that doesn't have quite enough nuances to it.
Mm-hmm. So you said you've been in recovery for more than, you know, 28 years.
20 years.
What was the aha moment where you said, okay, enough is enough?
In 1988, I was in jail in juvenile hall, and I'd been in this, you know, same institution over and over, probably a dozen times. And every time I'd been there in the past, I'd blamed everyone else for my circumstances. It was the police, it was society, system, you know, whatever. It was always an external blame. And that time, I took responsibility, and I said, oh, I'm here because of my actions. Because I'm the one, you know, drinking, using, stealing, fighting, all of the things that I was doing, you know, were choices that I was making, was how I was reacting to the pain in my life that had, you know, turned into addiction and, in my case, crime and violence. So I had that wake up, and with that wake up, that kind of aha, personal responsibility, not a victim, not, you know, not stuck, came some hope. If I got myself into this situation, maybe I can get out. And it was when my father took the opportunity to teach me meditation.
Mm-hmm. So I know that there's a history of addiction in the family. Do you think that impacted on the choices that you made early on?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, both of my parents had addiction issues. And, you know, my father had, you know, been an addict. And by the time I was born, you know, not been in active addiction, and he had really turned towards meditation and spiritual practice for his own, you know, he didn't think of himself as being in recovery, but he wasn't using the kind of drugs that he'd been addicted to in the past.
Mm-hmm. And again, in the recovery field, there's this dance that professionals do that, you know, questioning, is someone ever truly recovered, or are they always in recovery as a process?
Right.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, it depends on what our definition of recovered or, you know, what does it mean to recover? We're using a Buddhist view, and so we're actually using the view of full recovery of being like the third noble truth of Buddhism, which means that you have had an awakening to the point where you're no longer creating unnecessary suffering. This, what sometimes is referred to as nirvana or, you know, enlightenment or awakening. And I believe that there's actually the potential for people in this lifetime to train their heart and mind so thoroughly to develop enough compassion for pain, enough non-attached appreciation towards pleasure, no longer taking the mind or body to be who we are ultimately, and to have that kind of wisdom and compassion and not suffer anymore, and that's a full recovery, a full awakening. Now, while we're in the process of developing that wisdom and that understanding, I'd say we're still trying to recover our true nature.
And what is that? I got goosebumps when you said that. What is, you know, I've heard the term Buddha nature, but what is that, the truth, what you're referring to as
truth. Yeah, there's, you know, the Buddha said there is an unstained, unobscured potential within all of us that radiates kindness and compassion, that radiates appreciation and equanimity, that understands impermanence, that understands the impersonal nature of, you know, the human condition, and that this is the, you know, enlightened or awakened or Buddha potential within all of us, and that we can, and that it's already here, and that our work is to access it, that our work is to uncover it. That it has been obscured and covered by clinging and craving and addictive behaviors and aversion and resentment and all of those survival instincts, biological, evolutionary, survival-based instinctual drives that block our freedom and our happiness.
And I've heard of the idea of addiction being a hole in the soul. Can you speak to that, the idea that we feel like we're incomplete or we're missing something? Does what you're sharing help people to healthfully fill that hole?
Absolutely, but I wouldn't use language like soul. It gets a little too esoteric or mystical. I think it's much more practical around actual human relationships and relating to ourselves and our own emotions, so that it's much more of an embodied reality rather than a mystical kind of, you know, using language like spirit or soul. And that so much of what we're doing is learning to forgive ourselves and love ourselves and to forgive others and to make, you know, healthy connections with community, you know. It is all about the relationships of the people that we're with and around, and learning to show up in a, you know, Buddhism is all about a relational happiness. It's not about like, oh, yeah, I'm really happy when I'm meditating. It's about right speech and right action and service and livelihood and this engaged relational way of living our lives that's fully embodied. And then it's really about the human body and the human heart and the human mind. And, you know, of course, the Buddha didn't talk much about a soul. He said, you know, that what we call a soul is something that is, you know, created by birth, by having a mind and consciousness and perception and a body. And then there's this feeling I, me, mine that is the byproduct of incarnation.
And that's a perfect segue to let people know about what they will find on your website, noahlevine.com. Is that correct?
The noahlevine.com website exists, but it's not very good. I would actually send people to refugerecovery.com or againstthestream.org. Those are my two websites. Againstthestream.org is where you'll find information about my Buddhist teaching, retreats, meditation centers, classes, and then refugerecovery.com, where people can access information about this Buddhist recovery process, the treatment center that we run, and also the meetings that exist all over the country that are Buddhist recovery meetings.
Wonderful. And thank you, Noah. So after the break, folks, we're going to learn more about Refuge Recovery and about how families can get the support they need, because the addiction is not just in the person with the addiction itself. So I'm Edie Weinstein. This is It's All About Relationships. Catch you on the other side.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
It's All About Relationships is a gathering of friends worldwide. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein. Join us each Thursday night from 8 to 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. My guests are dynamic leaders in the field of human interaction, and no topic is off the table, from sexuality to spirituality to self-love. I'm a best-selling author, speaker, therapist, interfaith minister, and optimistic who sees the world through the eyes of possibility. Visit me at opti-mystical.com.
Yeah. You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
Welcome back to the next portion of It's All About Relationships. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, and my guest is Noah Levine, creator of Refuge Recovery. And we were talking before the break about the personal aspect of addiction. How about the families? What can families do to get the support they need while their loved one is either actively using or in recovery?
Yeah, we in Refuge Recovery, we use the same methodology for the active addict or the recovering addict as we would use for the family. And of course, we're using basic Buddhist philosophy and practice, so which is all about how are you suffering in your life and how can you end suffering in your life. So whether that's the suffering of addiction or the suffering of loving and caring about somebody who's suffering from addiction, the treatment is actually the same. It's looking at where are we clinging, where are we lacking compassion, where are we lacking good boundaries, where are we enabling, and how is our own mindfulness of our emotions, of our mind states, our own ethical behavior. You know, like sometimes families can get really caught up in, like, I think I'm being compassionate and generous, but actually when you look more deeply, you're enabling someone to stay addicted by not having appropriate mm-hmm. boundaries, and that sometimes that's actually what the addict needs, is the kindness in the form of a situational ethic that is saying no to the addict rather than saying yes.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes, I mean, when you I forget the word that you used, but craving, you know, even though you know, and I speak for myself too, I consider myself a person in recovery from workaholism and codependence. Mine are process addictions.
Right.
And there are times when I know something is not good for me, but I do it anyway.
Right.
And the best, you know, the definition of insanity, the typical definition is doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results.
Right.
I had a client that I saw when I was working as a counselor in an outpatient rehab, and he said, you know, that's the typical definition, but I have an even better one. He said, I know exactly what's going to happen, and I do it anyway.
Right.
And this is a guy that, you know, that used heroin himself for years.
Uh-huh.
He said, no, but I'm just going to go for it.
Yeah.
So how can we exercise self-restraint and self-compassion at the same time?
Right. That's the trick, is finding that internal balance between when is it time to refrain and have restraint, and when is it and time to just care about. Because even in compassion, compassion doesn't mean that you just, you know, sign up for pain all of the time. Sometimes compassion means that you avoid an avoidable pain. Ultimately, we want to develop compassion for the experiences in our life that are unavoidable. But Buddhism isn't suggesting some sort of masochistic, like, yeah, just, you know, be in pain and care about it. It's saying, like, mm-hmm. yeah, if you can avoid some pain and there's a skillful way to do it, you should absolutely do that. But if you can't, you know, if it's an unavoidable pain, then the only wise relationship to it is compassion. And so that's an internal, intuitive discernment that has to be developed within each one of us.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking about the word skillful. How do we get support? You know, those of us that have addictions
right.
of some kind, when we might ask for it in unskillful ways.
Right. Yeah, it's tricky. Hopefully, there's people around us that care about us and will, you know, be able to be there when the addict is ready, when we're asking for help. That's not always the case. You know, sometimes it's really like you've burned all of your bridges and you have to find your own way to meetings, whether those are 12-step meetings or refuge recovery meetings, or you have to find your own way into treatment, and nobody's going to help you this time because you've already been through 7 treatment centers and this time you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's, I think, you know, it puts families and friends, loved ones of the addict in a very difficult situation, because it can really turn into, you know, the cry wolf, you know, the person who cried wolf so many times that now it's hard to believe them. Are they really going to do it this time or not?
Yeah, and then as you were saying that, I was seeing that, you know, the idea of burning bridges, because I would talk a lot with my clients about that, is, you know, how do you repair the bridges that you've burned?
Yeah.
And it's doable. I mean, I've, in the last couple of months, I've interviewed two people, one of whom I know you know, is Chris Grasso, and then the other, Gordy Buffton. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but
mm-hmm.
if not, I'll connect you with him. He's a young man who spent his 20th birthday in jail.
Right.
Because of his addictions. And both of them would say that they've burned bridges with people in their lives and have been able to mend those bridges. And
yeah.
obviously you have as well. So it is
yeah.
possible. You know, you give
yeah, for sure.
That,
but it
know,
takes some
can.
Time. It takes some, you know, proving yourself of like, I'm really staying sober and I'm really trying hard. You know, just making the amends for our behavior isn't always enough, although it's an important piece of it. Often people really want to see, like, you know, call me when you have 6 months clean, not when you're 2 weeks out of detox and you're telling me it's going to be all different this time.
Right. And maybe the intention is, but sometimes you find that the craving, it's not the drug itself. It's, you know, there's something there that says, okay, I want something that I can't, you know, can't sit with. And I think, you know, my experience with meditation, you can tell me if this is so for you, is that it takes a lot of concentration. You got to sit with it sometimes.
Yeah.
You got to sit in the muck and the mire and the yucky pain crap.
Yeah. So, well, and the more you meditate, the more you understand impermanence. So, and the more you understand impermanence, then when you're sitting in the difficult emotion or repetitive thought or feeling, you also have the understanding of, okay, this is really hard right now, but it's changing and it's going to pass. And I've done this, you know, I've been meditating for some time now, and I've developed a tolerance towards this unpleasantness and perhaps mercy and even compassion towards this unpleasant, you know, thought, feeling, sensation that I'm
yeah.
in, and I know it's changing.
Yeah. And the word mercy again jumps out at me. It's something, you know, a story that your father told about, you know, if you get up in the middle of the night and you bang your foot on the bed, you know, your tendency is to curse and jump and, you know, get all bent out of shape. And that tells your body that you hate it. He said, you
right.
send it mercy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm feeling like he's in on the interview with us. You know,
yeah, for sure.
And,
well, you know, I mean,
he keeps coming to mind here.
I stole all of my best lines from him anyway, so.
That's good. So I'm sure he appreciates that. You know, that I don't know whether he's sitting on your end or my end, but he's here.
Right.
Stephen is definitely here. So the term Dharmapunks is a great name, and it really does. Tell us what that's about.
Well, you know, I mean, I was a punk rocker from a very young age, you know, growing up in the 70s, 80s, and I was a, you know, and I was one of the nihilistic, angry, angst-filled, you know, looking up to drug addicts like Sid Vicious, and, you know, because I had a sense from a young age that there was something wrong with our society and our world, that there was corruption, that there was oppression, and, you know, punk rock gave me an outlet for that, you know, some of which was wisdom, but, you know, without much solution. So when I got sober, when I got off of drugs, you know, I had this punk ethic, but I wanted to, and I started meditating, and I found the Dharma. And then there was this question of, like, well, do I have to be, like, a Buddhist? Like, you know, do I have to pretend like I'm, you know, Japanese or Tibetan or Thai? Or, you know,
mm-hmm.
do I have to be kind of holy roller or something? And it was really the beat literature of, you know, Burroughs and Kerouac and Ginsberg and all those guys of the 50s that really inspired me of, like, oh, here's American Buddhists who are, you know, still troublemakers. And I want to still be a troublemaker, but I want to be sober and I want to be, you know, and I want to be a revolutionary. And so it was from Kerouac's Dharma Bums that I took the moniker Dharma Punks. And, you know, and I just sort of ran with it as my own personal kind of label for me and my friends. But then when I started writing about my life, it made sense to call the book that, Dharma Punks.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So as we're like right at the end of the interview, it went by so fast. This is so much fun. Is there any final message you want to leave our listeners with? Just as jumping to get out.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, that we didn't cover was the thing, there's 12 steps are, the kind of dominant treatment paradigm for most people, and it works really well for people who have some level of theistic mindset. But for all of us who are more atheistic or agnostic or non-theistic, many of us, we found so much difficulty being in 12 steps where they're talking about God over and over and over. So Buddhism offers a non-theistic approach, and Refuge Recovery, really, I created it so that there was this non-theistic, psychological, emotionally intelligent, mindfulness-based approach to treating addiction. And there's, a couple hundred meetings around the country and more meetings starting, every day or every week there's a new meeting starting. And so it's a new program, but it's out there and it's available for people. And then people who are looking for treatment, we have a professional treatment center here in Los Angeles called Refuge Recovery.
Wonderful. So, folks, again, go to Noah's website, refugerecovery.com, or against the stream.com. And I thank you so much, Noah, for being our guest today.
My pleasure, Edie. Thank you. Have me back sometime. Happy to do it.
Oh, well, exchange this message. Definitely have him back. So
yeah.
You're reading his mind. And folks, next week my guest is Marcella Lyles, who is the creator of the Skin Hunger Project. And the theme is getting in touch with touch. So until next time, I thank you. I bless you. I love you. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on It's All About Relationships on Vivid Life Radio. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, asking you the all-important question, what does your vivid life look like? Hoping that it includes fulfilling and thriving relationships in all areas. Until next time, sending you abundant love from here.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.